Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings, buy one get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties, buy two get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Happy New Year, everybody. We are at the Treasure Chest Casino for our season finale. Sports Talk here at Treasure Chest. Come and join us until 7 o'clock tonight. We got a big old show for you, breaking down a ton of stuff. Ryan Roberts will be joining us after the first break. NFL draft and college football analyst from A to Z Sports. Also this hour, Leanne Herring, the director of recruiting at the Rebel Walk, breaking down the Gator Bowl with Ole Miss taking action later tonight. The 5 o'clock hour, Chris Dodd covers the NBA for Clutch Points. We'll get into some things with the Pelicans, including all those trade rumors. And then in the 6 o'clock hours, Eileen, say it again, Mike.
Nachik.
Eileen Nachik, covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for WFLA in Tampa Bay, will stop by and say hi to us. Also, Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter and WWL digital content producer at 6:30, breaking down the latest of the black and gold. We do have the injury report out, Mike, but Happy New Year to you, by the way.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too, Steve. That injury list kind of growing by the second, right?
Yeah, we've got no surprise with Alvin Kamara and Derek Carr still not practicing for the black and gold. Kendra Miller not taking part also in the concussion protocol. Peyton Turner not practicing with an ankle issue. Meanwhile, limited today. Pete Werner also in the concussion protocol. Juwan Johnson limited with a knee issue. Coming back for concussion, Chris Olave was a full go, so a positive for him going forward. And then,
man, why would you play Chris?
I think I said to you last time here, maybe you want to get the kid out there, get some confidence for him going into next year. But, yeah, there's obviously nothing to play for right now.
There's nothing for Chris to play for. You know, get yourself healthy. And it's great that you're back on the practice field.
Right.
But my thing is to play a game, there's nothing for stake. Everything is at stake for Tampa. You got to understand that. You know, for Chris and the Saints, I don't play him. I just don't. Same thing with Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara. And I know with Alvin, understanding how close he is to that 1,000 yards. But sometimes you got to save yourself, and somebody got to make that decision other than yourself. I'll ask you this. You're a big Eagles fan.
Yeah.
If it was just up to Saquon, he would play, wouldn't he?
I would think so, right.
Because he wants that record.
For sure.
But my thing is, I want him to help me down the stretch when maybe I could be in shot to get deep into the playoffs or in the Super Bowl. The record's great, and it is an individual record when you think about the rushing part because of the fact your offensive line plays a big part into it.
Right.
But, man, at the end of the day, I want you there for when it really counts, postseason. And I sort of feel the same way about Alvin. Yes, I'd love to have you hit that 1,000-yard mark. He's never done it before.
Right.
And if there are incentives involved, you might have to say, you know what? If you're the Saints, listen, we'll pay you the extra money for the incentives. Don't play. you know, to me, you're not gaining anything.
It's not worth it. To me, I agree with you there. I didn't think Alvin has anything to prove. Like I mentioned to you, though, I kind of understand if Olave just wants to get in the mix and trying to get that, you know, game, live, rep, action, confidence back after dealing with a number of concussions. But I also can understand the standpoint, too, where you're saying, what's worth it at this point? It's just save it for next year, pack it up, and not risk anything right now. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, get yourself healthy, ready for a new ride, new coach, everything new on this football team, and ready to roll. So, man, late in the year, you got to make those decisions, not as a player. I think if you're an organization head coach, you got to say you're not doing it. Not doing it.
Well,
I don't believe Sirianni made that choice. Because
right.
I think if it was up to him, he would have had Saquon.
Oh, he'd love to rub it in, too, to the Giants, right?
Oh, exactly. But I think somebody above him said, that ain't happening.
Right.
And it may have been the real big boss, the guy who cuts them checks, Mr. Lurie.
Yeah, you're looking at the Saints heading into this matchup in Tampa Bay. Obviously, with the incident that happened yesterday or the other day for the city of New Orleans, they want to provide a boost for some of the morale and the people dealing with the tragedy locally. But this team overall doesn't have anything to play for at stake right now, maybe ruining the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' chances of taking the division for a fifth straight year.
I've had so many people tell me, man, you know, I hate the Falcons. Ain't no way in the world I'm
pulling.
Bet
you want to help them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's no way in the world. I'm the biggest Saints fan in the world. There's no way in the world I'm going to pull for the Saints this weekend because I don't want the Falcons getting in. Steve, if I had a buck for every time somebody told me that, man, I'd have me quite a few dollars.
Anybody but Atlanta, right.
It's to that point where you dislike for the Falcons at this stage oversees the fact that you could get a sixth win of the season.
Right. We didn't make it, but you know what? They didn't either. It's pretty remarkable, though, when you look at, Mike, that Tampa Bay right now on the cusp of winning an NFC South title for the fifth straight season for them.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to Eileen about this, and think about the 2020 season. The Saints actually won the NFC South. They were the number two team.
Yeah.
Now, they won everything, and they won when it really mattered. They beat the Saints in the playoff game with Tom Brady. And they won the Super Bowl. They beat the ever-loving hell out of the Chiefs that year. Man, Tom Brady, man, he was great. But, man, their defense, man, did they get after Pat Mahomes? And he had some missing pieces up front along the offensive line. It was next man up didn't work. So just take a look at that game. He was running for his life. And then you figure 21, 22, 23, and now in 2024, it would be the fourth straight year that you win the NFC South. And they did a soft rebuild. That was an older team.
Right.
I was talking to Eileen about this. You think about, you know, with Brady and Gronkowski and Ndamukong Suh. Just those three guys, man, they put you, you know, you were way over the top as far as money was concerned. And also Jason Pierre-Paul. And so you had to get younger. You got to give Jason Light a lot of credit as a GM. He rebuilt this team. He swallowed hard because of the fact he had to pay out a lot of money to the veterans. Rebuilt this team, and now you got a very young football team and with cash now to spend in the offseason on free agency.
We're heading to break. When we get back, we'll be breaking more of down of the Sugar Bowl going on right now. It is a 3-3 tie.
How about that? If you got the
Notre
under.
Dame and the Bulldogs.
Man, if you got the under, you're thrilled right now, right?
Ryan Roberts, NFL draft and college football analyst, will be joining us right after the break. Stay tuned. We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino till 7 p.m. Make sure you stop by, stay haste, put some money on some of the games this weekend right here at the Sportsbook next to us at the Game Bar and Grill. We'll be right back with more Sports Talk, though. Stay tuned here on WWL after the break. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We are breaking down college football and the NFL draft coming up. Joining us for that, Ryan Roberts of A to Z Sports. Ryan, how you been doing, man? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys, too. I'm doing great. How's everybody over there?
Yeah, we're doing fine, Ryan. Thank you. I know you covered Notre Dame for a while, and we're watching the game here. It's late in the second quarter. It's 3-3. this game seems to be in the running lane of Georgia. Because if you look back during the season, basically other than the one loss, Notre Dame tsunamied everybody. I mean, it wasn't close. Yeah. This game is rolling in the kind of path that Georgia has played games this year.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a fair analysis. I mean, obviously you think back to like the Clemson game, for instance, right? The first game of the year where it was a really close, tight defensive battle at the end of the first half. And then the second half is when Georgia came out and, you know, started creating some explosive plays and kind of rolled over ugly for Clemson on that way. So I think that's fair to say. I will say this though, is that when you're comparing the two and, you know, use like a Clemson in comparison to Notre Dame, for instance, Notre Dame does have a lot of mirroring characteristics to Georgia. And I think that kind of plays in the favor of it remaining a close game until the end. I do think that this game is going to be a one-score game. Anybody can have a chance to win in the end. I get that vibe because I think Notre Dame does have – it's funny, because since Carson Beck got hurt and now you have Gunnar Stockton at quarterback, I think that they are almost – like they are almost mirror images of each other right now, this current state. You know, Carson Beck in, it would be a little bit of a different animal, but you have on both sides – an athletic, mobile quarterback. You have offenses that do want to establish the run, and you have really just stingy defenses that want to play a physical brand of football, and the offensive lines that want to run block. They want to get downhill. They want to be physical. So I think it's a mirror image of one another, which is why I think that the end result's going to be a little bit different than a couple of those games. But in theory, I agree with you that if it does become a game where you're going down the stretch, one score game, I think it does lend into the Georgia's favor a little bit because they've been a little bit more accustomed to those football games. But I do think Notre Dame's a little bit of a different type of team than what they've been doing that to recently.
You saw glimpses of it and then bang, they get clocked by Michigan. But the last 2 weeks, oh my God, if they continue to play at that level, nobody's going to touch Ohio State. I mean, they are so talented, and you see the best of them. And it was almost like they needed the shock of a loss to put them back on the right track. But, man, offensively, defensively, special teams, they don't have a weakness. Now, again, it's to continue that because you never know on any given day. But right now, man, Ohio State looks like a team that's going to be very, very difficult to keep out of being the national champ.
Yeah, I it was funny enough, man, is that last night in Slack, I was pitching that idea. I didn't end up writing the article. I think somebody else did. But it is, I think Michigan woke up a beast a little bit now, right? Like, for the fourth straight year, you didn't win the Big Ten championship game. You didn't beat Michigan, right? So, like, it shocked the system. And we heard it all week afterwards. It was like, Ryan Day's job security, right? Like, if he doesn't win big in the playoffs, then you might be in a little bit of trouble here. You know what I mean? So I do think that game woke them up a little bit. Now, I will say this, is that I think they're easily now the most balanced team that's left in this playoff. Like you said it, I think you said it perfectly. There's not really a easy weakness to find. The only potential weakness there is if they beat themselves, which it's happened in the past, you know, like there's a reason that Ryan Day was a little bit on the, at least I wouldn't say he was on the hot seat, but like people had their antennas up after that Michigan game, because we have seen that song and dance from Ryan Day already during the tenure at Ohio State. You are paying a lot of money for that roster. You have NFL dudes on both sides of the football on every level of offense and defense. So I do think there's still a lot of pressure on them. But I agree with you, in a vacuum, if they're playing the best version of themselves, I don't think anybody in the playoffs can beat them. I really don't. But it's going to be about the human element of this conversation, the human error. Can Ryan Day continue showing what he showed the last two playoff games? And can Will Howard continue to be mistake-free? Because if they do, I do think that they're the best team in the playoffs, and I think it's by a solid margin at this point.
You look at the teams that have advanced, and I look at how it ended for Texas and losing again to Georgia, and then how they played yesterday. Man, I would want to play Texas. I'll be honest with you. They got a lot of talent, immense amount of talent on that football team. But, I mean, it's hard to say because of how far they've gone, but they're almost like an underachieving team. I don't know better term to use, but to get to this point, and yet you really haven't overly impressed anyone at this stage.
Yeah. Well, I think that's also fair to say. I would say it like this, is that I think that the volatility that you see with Texas, because like when Texas is at their best, they look like they can beat anybody in college football at their best. When they're at their medium to worst, they look like they are very vulnerable. And we saw, I mean, you're up by 16 points in the fourth quarter. Like that should have been an end game. Like that was easy, right? Like the first, you know, three quarters plus, you look like the best team on the field against Arizona State by a large margin. Like it was a chasm. But unfortunately, I think that when you have volatility at the quarterback position, and it's not all on Quinn Ewers. Like it's not. That's not what I'm saying at all. But he is the microcosm of this team, though, is that when Quinn Ewers is at his best, Texas can beat anybody. But when he's not playing sharp, and he wasn't very sharp yesterday, like he threw a couple great balls down the stretch, obviously, in an overtime, but he was not a great version of himself yesterday. And I think that's what you saw, is that when it stagnated a little bit, that Texas defense is great. Jahdae Barron, Anthony Hill, like so many future NFL players, but when your offense is not being a complementary part of your football team, eventually you're on the field too long. Eventually you get a little bit tired. I mean, I think Arizona State ran like 90 plays yesterday, or whatever the heck it was. I mean, it was a wild number. So I think that it's a volatility head coach, quarterback, you know, and I think Steve Sarkisian is a good coach, but again, he's fighting that same battle that we were talking about with Ryan Day, and what Dan Lanning is going to go through now moving forward here is that the consistency in those big moments, right? Like that's the next step that a coach like Steve Sarkisian needs to make. And I think that the volatility at head coach in certain aspects, but more the volatility at quarterback yesterday, because I think if he makes a couple better reads, a couple more accurate balls, doesn't turn the football over, I think that game ends up being a 2-3 score game in the end, ultimately. So I think they need to be a little bit better at the couple spots that matter most, but they are a very talented team, and if they get hot at the right time, I think they can beat anybody, but the question is if they will be consistent in that moment.
Your thoughts, he made it official today, but it's no surprise. Jalen Milroe announced that he's coming out early for the 2025 draft. And with Jalen, I know one thing, he'll win the offseason. He's a good kid, and athletically, he's going to test through the roof. He's got a cannon for an arm. It's his erratic nature and his footwork and his body balance in these short intermediate throws that are all over the board. He actually throws, for me, a better medium-long throw and the deeper throws better than the short stuff. But, you know, it is a supply and demand business, and they don't have enough. And there's always a Dr. Phil in the NFL. I can quell all of those ills that Jalen's got. And I know one thing, just as a human being, he's going to win this offseason. Now, somebody's going to have to take a shot on him because of that erratic nature in the short, intermediate part of the game.
Well, no matter what position for NFL scouts, they convince themselves they can fix someone, right? And like you said, as long as it checks out mentally, they're going to say that they can figure out some of the processing issues, some of the footwork issues. Like those things can, in theory, at least from the footwork especially, they can be fixed. Now, Jalen was actually, I was told that he was wrestling with this decision a little bit. Like there was a few weeks ago when he was playing a little bit better football, more consistent. It was like everyone knew that he was going to come out. Like he was going to answer because it's not a good quarterback class. You know what I mean? Like it's Cam Ward, it's Shedeur Sanders, and then it's who the heck is quarterback three? Well, it's probably going to be Jalen Milroe by default. Now, whether that default happens in the top 10, late first round, early second round, that is still a little bit of the question. There's volatility there, and he is all over the boards according to certain teams, right? Like there's some teams that are very kind of entranced by the athleticism and the arm strength that you talked about, but then there's others that, you know, they had their hesitations, right? Because it is a mentally driven position, obviously, playing the quarterback position. But I think that you can buy into him pretty easily. He was, I think, second-guessing that decision a couple weeks ago as he started kind of hitting a little bit of a lull in a rough spot of the season. But you said it, it's a demand position, and especially when the quarterback class is not great. So he's going to get overdrafted, I think, based upon what his film is. But you are going to take a bet that you can get the best out of him. And there's, I mean, I could see a bunch of teams, honestly, just saying, like, I could fix that. Because you don't make a lot of guys, there's not a lot of guys on the planet Earth that play the quarterback position that are 6'1 plus, 220 pounds, probably run high 4.3s and have a cannon for an arm. Like, a lot of those just don't exist. So someone's going to take a gamble. The question is it top 10 gamble? Is it end of first round gamble where someone comes back into the back of the first round? That's the only question I have as far as, like, where the slot is ultimately going to be for a Milroe.
Yeah, I watch Anthony Richardson at Florida,
I mean, he didn't overwhelm me throwing the football. But, man, once he worked out for everybody, it was like, whoa. And he got picked as a top five guy. You got to cover him. Your thoughts on where the LSU program is today and Brian Kelly. Brian didn't want to tangle at all with the transfer portal. I mean, he said it after year one. We're going to build this strictly through basically the high school ranks. Every once in a while we'll reach out and get a transfer guy, but we're not going heavy into that. He didn't change his tune real quick with that. Your thoughts on Kelly? Can he be the guy that can lead LSU to another national championship?
It's a great question. For me, what Brian Kelly is all about raising the floor of programs, right? And we've seen that at we saw that at Central Michigan. We saw that at Cincinnati. We saw that at Notre Dame. And honestly, we saw that at LSU the first year when there was a full roster turnover and he overachieved and, you know, won his side of the SEC and made it to the SEC championship game. Like, that was overachieving. And the way he does that is he raises the floor. He's got that kind of dictator feel to him, right? A guy that, no nonsense, this is how we do things, this is the culture we're building, this is everything involved that you need to do to be a part of my program. And it works in the fact of, I don't really ever see, barring something just catastrophic, I don't see Brian Kelly losing. I don't see him not winning more than 8 games a season, right? Like, he's going to win 8-9 probably at a minimum, and then in a really good year he'll probably win 10 or 11. But I do have my hesitation on saying that he's going to win a national championship at LSU, because this is going to be a fascinating offseason. Next year is a make-or-break year, not in the sense of he'll get fired if he doesn't have a great season, but it is make-or-break in the ideology of what's going to win with him at LSU, because like you said, he is a very high school-driven coach. And I think that that's the right way to go. I mean, like, for me, I always say that, like, you want to dip into the portal because you want to, not because you have to, right? And unfortunately, he had to a degree this offseason. There's a lot of pressure behind him, but you had to rebuild the wide receiver room. You had to get a lot of parts on defense to be able to really help yourself, you know, take that next step, hopefully. Sorry if you guys hear some yelling in the background. I guess the Notre Dame fans in the house. But but for me, Coach Kelly is going to always win the games that he should, and he's going to raise the floor. But this offseason is going to show if he is doing a good enough job on the recruiting trail and developing, because he's doing a good job as far as, like, the ranks of the classes at the end of the day, but now it's about developments. You know, those sophomores, can they take a step forward? Can those juniors take a step forward? Can you retain your talents and then also add to it? Because he's obviously adding a lot of good players in the portal, but I think the baseline and the ceiling of this program is going to be determined upon how he is developing those recruiting classes that he's bringing in. So I have my hesitation. He's going to raise the floor. I just am a little bit in between on how much he's going to raise the ceiling at LSU. That's my big hesitation.
Ryan, definitely appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of this game and all that comes with the rest of the NFL season and also the end of the college football playoff. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ryan.
Absolutely, fellas. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
All right.
NFL draft and college football analyst Ryan Roberts of A to Z Sports. You can check out all his work there. We shall take a break.
Notre Dame
on top big here over Georgia to start the Sugar Bowl.
They get a field goal and then a turnover, short field, bang, one play touchdown, 13-3, Irish over Georgia.
Stay tuned. We'll be keeping you up to date with the latest on the Sugar Bowl right here on WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk, and it is halftime at the Sugar Bowl. Notre Dame leading Georgia 13-3. Definitely the Irish have come out looking like their name. They fighting Irish, taking it to the Bulldogs early.
That last minute of play changed everything. It was 3-3 to kick a field goal. It looked to be 6-3 going into the half, and then a turnover to force fumble on Gunnar Stockton. And it was a short one play touchdown, and Notre Dame got him. But and again, Notre Dame has tsunamied so many teams that really something the way they've won games in the past this year. So let's see. Georgia's been in a lot of games like this. But, man, Georgia looks like a tight football team right now. They really do.
Talking about another bowl game coming up, the Gator Bowl. Happy to welcome in now Leanne Herring, the Director of Recruiting at the Rebel Walk. How you doing, Leanne? Thanks for joining us today.
Doing good, gentlemen. I appreciate you guys having me on. Yeah, I just tuned in and talked about what a crazy 24 hours of college football games and playoffs it's been. I just caught that last play, that turnover. Man, talk about the Notre Dame trying to get Notre Dame Fighting Irish living up to their name, like you said, and trying to wreak some havoc on Kirby Smart and Gunnar Stockton over there in that bowl game.
Leanne, because we thought, when I first called you, I thought this game would be the early game and we would get a little bit of a preview, at least a half of it. But that's been moved back. Your thoughts on Ole Miss, because we know Jackson Dart has already announced he's coming out early for the NFL draft, but he's going to play in this game. A lot of times, guys, when they announce they're coming out early, especially at that position, I'm not playing. Your thoughts on Jackson playing in this game, and when you look at the whole season, it sort of ended in a disappointing manner. Because I think we had talked about it before the season started that, you know, Ole Miss thought this was their chance to get into that 12-team playoff and maybe play for something much bigger. It didn't work out that way. I still don't see how LSU won in Baton Rouge against some, to be honest with you, because the only time they led is when they scored at the end to finish the game. But your thoughts on Jackson Dart playing and the future for Ole Miss?
You know, I just think it speaks a lot to the culture and testament, not just of Jackson Dart, but that Lane Kiffin's built since his tenure there over the last five seasons. You know, and Jackson Dart not being the only top guy that's, you know, heading to the NFL that just has decided to play and finish in this bowl game. Of course, at the beginning of the year, like you mentioned, there was a lot of hype surrounding, you know, because this is probably one of the best rosters that Ole Miss has put together in program history. And if any team was going to do it, like I said, it was going to be this one. But again, I think a lot of the underlying, you know, in everything was there was a lot of missed opportunities because in the losses that we had against Florida, obviously LSU and, of course, Kentucky have lingered on, you know, were not blowout losses. They were very tight and close games. But, you know, Jackson Dart has just been a great athlete to watch, not just on the field, but how he's come and progressed as an athlete, as an individual. He's definitely going to be a huge void. But again, you know, I think it just is a testament to the culture that's being built. And I think it's about finishing what you started. Jackson Dart has, from the moment, you know, he transferred and started here for USC, he has expressed, you know, his sentiment about, you know, being able to grow and develop. And the thing you got to love about Jackson Dart, unlike a lot of other high-profile athletes that you would see in his situation that, you know, probably would opt out to not play in this game, you know, to keep themselves healthy, you know, get ready and start that transition to the NFL draft. And to that, he's not that guy. And, you know, from the moment you've heard him talk about, even early in the season, you know, when there's talk about his height, you know, him possibly making the Heisman run. But he was more concerned, you know, about where his team was going to go and how he was going to lead him there. So, again, another testament. It's going to be a bittersweet moment to see, the legacy. But he leaves a long-lasting legacy despite what happened on that field. So many records broken. So many he's helping this offense and this program go to the next level. And it's also exciting to see him, you know, hopefully in this ball game, if the Ole Miss Rebels are able to get comfortable enough, that we'll also see an exciting couple plays, maybe even a full quarter from, you know, the next, I think, great star at Ole Miss as far as QB position, Austin Simmons, who's going to bring in a lot of unique things to the package. We got to see him a glimmer of what he could do during that brief Georgia moment. So again, it's an exciting game. I think for this game, for me, obviously, and for many Rebel fans, it wasn't where we wanted to be. But again, it's an opportunity. We got to put everything in the rear view and look to the future. And I believe that this, for me, is an evaluation game. It's the opportunity to evaluate that where our roster stands. Also to give some of our NFL guys who may not make it to the combine an opportunity to maybe up their draft stock, also get some film for those scouts and those teams. So there's a lot of opportunity still left, you know, as we count down to kickoff from Jacksonville.
And there's been a lot of rumors kind of swirling around Mekhi Hughes, the former Tulane running back that's in the transfer portal. And mostly around two teams, Oregon and Ole Miss. The thought there, having watched him, I mean, he's a bell cow runner. I mean, he's a north-south guy. He's not going to give you a lot of wiggle, but he just keeps pounding away at you. I think he'd be a real good fit in Ole Miss's offense. What have they done in the transfer portal to bring in a running back? Because they lose a couple guys.
They do lose a couple guys, and I'm glad you bring up about the running book. You know, running back room, that's definitely something that's been in question. Of course, there's a lot of speculation this season, you know, why Ulysses Bentley wasn't used more. And, of course, I think today is going to be, like I said, an evaluation of the roster. It looks like Logan Diggs, you know, you guys know him well formerly from LSU, a guy that you guys have seen the opportunity. He's finally going to get his opportunity, you know, after recovering from an ACL. He will be available in this game. So it looks like him and Ulysses Bentley will be taking the reps. As far as the transfer portal, of course, Lane Kiffin was able to land a very up-and-coming rising young running back in Kewon Lacy out of Missouri. So the running back room looks to be building. We also, of course, Shekhi Mills-Knight, another high school running back, that four-star running back out of the Baylor School in Tennessee that you know, Lane Kiffin and his staff have been able to land. But it looks like they're still looking to the portal, and you know, that Tulane running back, like you said, he's a gritty guy. He may not be able to give you a lot of threat, but one thing that he's good for is he's one of those traditional backs that's gonna pound and grind. Again, the Rebels are hoping, from what I'm hearing, that they will be able to you know, kind of ease their way in, but it's gonna be a tough sell. A lot of relationships with Oregon and a lot of standing points where it seems like that's likely where Hughes will end up. But again, in this day and age with NIL, a lot can happen. But what we're hearing, it's not looking very strong for Ole Miss as far as landing him right now, because there's a lot of ties and a lot of things with Oregon that seem to favor in that direction.
Rebuilding the defensive line, and that was something Lane did last year. Now he's got to do it again. It's sort of an ongoing process. But I thought that was one of the best Ole Miss defensive lines I've ever seen in my lifetime, what they had last year. That was really, really good. And they're going to lose some guys early to the NFL and graduation. Your thoughts, because I think that's where you win everything, offensive, defensive line. Your thoughts on the rebuild they're going to have to do along that defensive line.
Well, I'm glad that somebody agrees with me on that. I know we talk about, you know, always rebuilding, obviously getting a strong quarterback room, running back room, you know, secondary. But as much as they say defense wins championships, it's what we've seen it all season long, not just with Ole Miss, but in other SEC, ACC, Power 4 teams. Those games are won in the trenches, and it comes down to having strong defensive linemen. And I think one of the areas that Ole Miss struggled with, despite having an elite defensive front, and we saw that the defensive front this year was outstanding for Ole Miss, and it really was able to keep them. But I really think that we have to shift forward as far as the linemen concerned, is continue to try to figure out where we can pinpoint with the exiting of Jackson Dart how we are going to protect Austin Simmons next season, because I think that a lot of the situations that Ole Miss got itself pushed up against the wall that could have been avoided was because of the lack of depth and experience we had with that offensive line. Of course, injuries play. So I expect us that's where we're going to look to through the portal. And, you know, we have some young guys coming up. But, yeah, it's definitely difficult to replace alignment defensively and offensively. So it'll be really interesting to see. I'm also, like I said, if we do see Austin Simmons, a lot of people outside the Rebels or maybe not in the SEC probably don't realize that Austin Simmons is a lefty quarterback. I always think that that's a really unique dynamic. Any athlete that comes in who's predominantly left hand. So I'm really interested to see how we're going to address that situation going back again to the offensive line. Of course, we have Williams and Pounds are two guys that we've had. Are we going to keep them? I think that the right tackle, obviously, with Austin Simmons being more likely our guy heading into next season, how we will take that right tackle position and how we will have to reposition that offensive line to provide better protection. I always say, guys, that you can have a star quarterback, you can have four-star wide receivers and running backs, but if you don't have that protection up front, and nobody can do their job. I know there was a lot of criticism in certain games where receivers and you know, Jackson Dart were having difficulty. Well, it all goes back to not having strong protection up front. So I think that will be another key thing that we're going to utilize this game, like I said, as an evaluation tool to be able to see where do we head to heading into the offseason. And I think also being able to see some of our young guys in positions today, get some playing time. It's always different, I believe, to judge where our roster stands when you have live reps versus spring practice.
Leanne, definitely appreciate your time and all the information you shared with us. Enjoy the Gator Bowl.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you guys so much. Adi Pani.
Leanne Herring, Director of Recruiting at the Rebel Walk. You can check out all her great work there. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll wrap up this hour and give you an update on what's up with the Sugar Bowl right after this on WWL, the Treasure Chest Casino. Closing out this hour of sports talk, when we get back at the 5 o'clock hour, we'll be breaking down some Pelicans talk. Chris Dotson, who covers the NBA for Clutch Points, will join us, talk about the Pellies and all those trade rumors swollen out there. Plus, we'll get into Saints versus Tampa Bay in the season finale coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Stay tuned for more of Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest. Welcome back into Hour 2 of Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Steve Geller along with Mike Dettillier. And boy, oh boy, that Notre Dame Fighting Irish coming out big the last couple of seconds in the Sugar Bowl over here, Mike.
Yeah.
Putting up some major points on the Bulldogs. Now lead 20-3 after halftime.
In 53 seconds.
53. Not even a full minute.
They scored 17 points.
Oof.
No, when we're talking to Ryan, you know, it was 3-3, and we're talking about this sort of looks like a game in Georgia's lane of traffic. Not anymore. This is the sort of deal Notre Dame has done throughout the season other than one, that early season upset loss. And so, man, to see it and then run back the opening kickoff of the second half all the way back for a score, 20-3, man, the way Georgia's offense is playing right now, and Steve, it ain't too good, to be honest with you. But he had great blocking early on, but then, boy, once the sea parted, then speed took over. Speed had never had a bad day in his life. Never. Never has had
you
a bad
say
day.
You can't teach it.
And so, man, Notre Dame, in what we have talked about last week and now today, when they jump on you, man, they like a bad cat. And they catch you pretty good, 20-3. And like I say, when it was 3-3, this sort of looked like the type of game Kirby Smart had been involved with so many times with this Georgia team. Gunnar Stockton, we're going to find out a lot about him today.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
A lot of Georgia fans, oh, you know, he was the better quarterback than Carson Beck. You better start thinking a little bit about that. Man, the one thing, you know, okay, he was erratic, Carson Beck, no question about it. But he's the type of guy that can get you back in a game like this. I'm not real sure about Gunner, and we're fixing to see. But, man, their defense is playing sick'em out there. Every play, you see them jumping the edges and getting a lot of people in the backfield of Georgia and affecting Gunnar Stockton's throws.
Really awesome to see the crowd, obviously, in full force at the Sugar Bowl, too, despite the unfortunate events that occurred the other day with the terrorist attack here on the New Orleans city. But everybody able to still come out strong in a strong showing crowd-wise for the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, no question about it. Charlie had to fight the traffic. You and I, we came to Kenner.
Right, we're in Kenner.
Yeah, so we didn't have to fight it downtown. Man, there were so many people downtown, and it was, you know, kind of warmed your heart. Because, you know, bad things are going to happen in life. I think we're living in those times, and you can't let that overtake your life. And I think we're seeing it today to have this done, the crowd that was there. The only thing you really feel bad about, so many people, you know, the way they had booked their hotel and airplane flights,
right.
You're kind of stuck, you know, in that spot. And so, man, you feel bad for them of having to redo it or just to say, you know what, I'm going to throw the towel in. I'm not going to make it. But, man, that was huge crowds in and around Poydras Street leading up to the Superdome, and really great to see.
Yeah, what I'm hoping at least is that the hotels and airlines were working with a lot of those people to make those accommodations work for them, considering the situation that happened.
Yeah, the other part about it is you don't know everybody's work schedule.
Right.
See, that's the other part of it. Some people, you know, they maybe had planned it and then planning on maybe being back at work for either the Thursday or the Friday. So you don't know. And, man, unexpected. I mean, most of us would have never thought this would have happened here. You know, you'd have thought, you know, if New York or Los Angeles or Chicago, nobody happened in our backyard. And it just kind of opened your eyes to what we, you know, I hate to say
it. The evils in the world.
Yeah, there's so much of that out there. And what would get somebody to do that and, you know, to take the lives of innocent people on a New Year's night? Just awful.
Yeah, considering obviously the crowd in town you knew for the Sugar Bowl and it being, you know, a New Year's evening in New Orleans, definitely unfortunate events. And I know more and more information still coming out about everything. Just curious, the intention or why New Orleans and why, you know, making it from Texas to here to pull this off just seems so ridiculous. And unfortunately, you know, we're never going to get really, I think, all the answers.
Steve, you never can define what makes somebody turn evil.
Yeah.
In life. You really can't define what's the trigger point in that. But we see it, you know, and then, like I say, for most of us, we didn't think it would happen here. And yet, you know, it happens right now, backyard.
This hour, Mike, we're going to be talking a lot about the Saints and also Pelicans. What's going to be going on with them? Unfortunately, the losing skid continues for the Birds. Another tough one for them in Miami last night.
Goodness.
Man, oh, man. And you just look all around with this team, and they look kind of lost right now. And I don't know what Willie Green can do, the head coach, to get this team back on track.
So, Hebert was telling me, Mike, we got a split against the Wizards. They bad. I said, you know what? I think the Wizards are saying the exact same thing. You know, and they may somebody
they
may come
sixth win finally.
Right, somebody may come out of this with two wins, but as bad as the season was for the Saints, and I think you and I thought this would not be a winning season. Now, we thought they'd win more than five games
for sure.
The shocker for me in sports is how it came apart so quickly for the Pelicans. All the hype of the offseason, and you look how they played throughout mostly last year, and when you were healthy, you were a really good basketball team. And then you get DeJounte Murray to come in to kind of be the orchestra leader, and you thought, man, you know, you got a shot at something this year. Man, it ain't nothing worked out. I know injuries certainly have played a part in it, but Steve, this is, of all the things that happened sports-wise locally, the Pelicans were a surprise for me of how they started this season.
Right, and that's how they ended last year.
Yeah.
You were building more hope.
And you don't see a light at the end of the tunnel.
No.
You really don't.
And we're just a month away from the NBA trade deadline, and we figure that this team is going to be making some moves and doing some roster dump. But
we'll
see. What are they going to get back in
return? Well, my thing is,
the value down,
man,
on all these guys.
The Red Cross is there for a reason, but I'm not going to be the Red Cross team. I'm not giving you up anything.
Yeah,
you
know, you
got to give me fair deal on any, you know, any kind of trade value. So we'll see if something can be done, but if it's a giveaway, then I'm against it.
We'll get into more Pels talk and the trade rumors all around the Birds when we get back from the break. Chris Dotson, who covers the NBA for Clutch Points, will join us. We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino till 7 p.m. We'll be giving you updates on the Sugar Bowl as it's going on right now. Notre Dame's jumped out to a 20-3 lead over Georgia. We still got 13 minutes left in the third quarter there, but coming back with more sports talk. So stay tuned right after this here on WWL. Welcome back here to the Treasure Chest Casino for our Thursday edition of Sports Talk. And Georgia not going down and dying just yet. They have put another touchdown on the board. It is now 20-9, pending an extra point here, waiting on that from the Bulldogs. Notre Dame still on top in this matchup. Before we go further, talking some Pelicans, Mike, I know you got some big LSU recruiting news that just came out.
Yeah, Gunnar Stockton hit that pass to Cash Jones. Boy, somebody blew the coverage at linebacker. Cash came out of there clean, and Gunnar spotted him. So looks as though it'll be a 20-10 game for Notre Dame over Georgia in the third quarter. But LSU has landed. Now, again, this ain't worth the piece of paper it's written on, but they landed the eighth best defensive lineman in the country. And Jarelyn McCoy, who's a 6 foot, 6.5, 245 pound defensive end from Mississippi, Man, he had a bunch of teams after him. USC, Tennessee, Miami of Florida.
Wait. How big did you say this gentleman is?
He's 6'6" and a half, 245. Ooh, no, he came to our Louisiana line camp right before his sophomore year. Now, he wasn't weighing no 245. I know that. he was more like that second number was a one. So it was somewhere in there. But he, almost every time he walked, he looked like he was riding a small horse. I mean, he sort of towered over everybody there. So LSU gets a big commitment for 2026. Now, here's the hard part, keeping him committed to LSU. So they did get Jerelyn McCoy from Mississippi, and looks as though USC had the money bag out at that time, too, to try to grab him just like they did Stewart from New Orleans.
Mike, now on the line with us, Chris Dotson, who covers the NBA for Clutch Points. Always a joy to talk to you, Chris. Happy New Year. How you been, man?
Hey, man, doing about as well as we can. Happy New Year to y'all and everybody listening. Appreciate you having me on.
When you look at this Pelicans team right now, obviously, Chris, there's a ton of trade rumors that have been swirling around, whether it's Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, or heck, everybody pretty much on the roster has been up for grabs, it seems, in the trade winds. But what have you been hearing the latest going forward with this team and the trade deadline? I know we're basically a month away now.
Yeah, been hearing a lot of things from a lot of different places. I think the biggest takeaway, though, is you would probably see Brandon Ingram moved before Zion Williamson. A big part of that is just, one, Zion's contract. They only have 20% guaranteed now. If he plays 51 games, it's 80%. It's going to count for more or less different in the summer. But they're really making a priority to get Brandon Ingram to a new home, or with this new management, maybe get him to a short-term deal in New Orleans. But I think that would be the more unlikely of the two options.
Chris, I know I get asked about it a lot, so I'm going to ask you, when we expect him, Zion Williamson, to get back on the court for real? I mean, none of this play stuff on, you know, just taking a few shots, but actually get it on the court in a real game.
Yeah, until you hear the team say he's playing 5-on-5 at practice, we won't see him in a 5-on-5 game. They've been so careful with him all over these years. I don't think you'll see him jump and skip a step now. Just to get back on the court and build up his value, you know, the trade value before the trade deadline, or trying to hit the 51 games. But I do think we will see him back more towards the front end of January than the back end of January.
When you look at it, I was telling Steve, me and Bobby and I were having this conversation with the Wizards up next, you know, back-to-back games. Bobby was like, Mike, come on, they can't lose both these games. I was like, listen, I ain't real sure about that. He said, at least they got a split. But, man, you're talking about the two sort of bottom-of-the-barrel teams right now, record-wise, in the NBA. Now, sort of Wizards, they got a win the other night. But, good gracious, when I think about Saints and LSU and Tulane and everything we've covered in 2025, how this has kind of just come apart for the Pelicans is the biggest surprise. Because I think for a lot of people, including myself, I didn't think the Saints would have a winning record. I thought LSU would be kind of in the zip code that they were. Tulane, John's done a great job there. But I didn't think it would be this bad. Now, injuries certainly got plays a part in it. But, Chris, I think you'd agree, it's more than injuries, too. This team really doesn't have an identity at all out on the court.
Yeah, they definitely don't have an identity. The source told me back when the Pels played in Memphis, and that's the two teams I'm covering back and forth up I-55, that the Birmingham squadron run the offense better than the Pelicans, and they run the same offense. And you were mentioning all the other teams. The great thing about this city is, yeah, we expect a lot from our sport teams, but we're not going into every year thinking championship. We just want to see you represent us well, be competitive, give us some playoff games, and, hey, if there's a little bit of hope of a title in there, that never hurts. But this Pelicans team does lack an identity. They lack, obviously, the wins, and this is going to be tough for the locker room to hear, but they still think they can get to the 10th seed. You know, some of these guys really believe they can go on a run. If everybody gets healthy, they'll talk that up. But having Washington, like you guys are just mentioning, back-to-back, if they even split those, you've got to have some conversations, you know, as players. Because even though Washington has been playing great and they just got a win, they also had a 20-point loss on their record last week. You've got to come out, and if you think you have more talent than Washington and you think you've got a chance as a player and that locker room really believes it, you got to go into Washington. You got to get wins. You got to win at home. You got to start reeling some things off, or, again, those players are going to have a conversation like the fans are having about the tank job, the trade, and who's going to wind up where, because we need a reset here in New Orleans for a team that does have an identity that will represent this city.
Yeah, looking at this Wizards team coming to the Smoothie King Center, I know they just have one road win on the season like the Pels this season, but do we have to worry about, Chris, at all, a Jonas Valanciunas revenge game tomorrow?
Well, you got to worry about his revenge game just because of the way – I mean, they let him start. He played 3 minutes, and then they sat him the rest of the game. There's – every fan in the Smoothie King Center and watching at home will realize that JV has every reason to feel slighted by this organization because of the way things played out last year. The way they used him, the way they just kind of, okay, he's there but not really going to be here. We'll let him start but never use look at him again. If him and Kyle Kuzma get going early – JV might have another one of those 20 and 20 type of nights that we all know can still happen. And I would hate to see it happen to the Pelicans, but I would understand it and have a little bit of joy for JV in my heart. So I'll leave it at that.
When you look at the Pels, they could be getting back a little extra to the lineup in this game tomorrow night. It was announced Jose Alvarado at practice saying he's going to be suiting up. So at least there's another body coming back for this team.
There's another body coming back to this team, and it's the exact right body considering the situation and the tragedy the city just faced. And I know the team put out a statement, but this is a wonderful opportunity for them to make some tickets, $14 for the victims. All that money should go to proceeds to help some families, and Jose should be able to get up there and put a spark in the Smoothie King Center that should be more full than usual, just because I think a lot of us want to go do something besides think about the tragedies that have been hitting the city between buildings collapsing and Bourbon Street. It's going to be big. It's going to be huge for this city, and I hope everybody shows up with the right intentions at heart.
Chris, I was going to ask you about that because that building collapse, that's not too far from your place, right?
No, it's two doors down from me. I was 30 seconds away, about to walk that way. We bapped it. It was 42 steps from my front porch to the first brick. And sadly, I didn't have my car in the right spot. I was hoping that thing would get paid off, but you know, we was in the parking lot across the street. I do feel bad for Ms. Lily, though. I know that they're doing some stuff for her, and she lost her car. But, yeah, the building is literally right next door. That burned-out building is my backyard.
No, I'm glad you well with everything. Yves Messe, he was named the NBA's Western Conference Rookie of the Month. And I think of all the surprises, it's how well he's played this year. With everything that has been negative with this team, and certainly Brandon Brown, with picking him up, I think, too, was a really nice addition. But, man, you can see this young man got some talent. Now, you know, it's going to be a little while before he can piece everything together. But you see the long-term talent skill set that you have in Messi.
Yeah, hey, we were just talking about building collapse. So we can go out there and grab some bricks, right? He's missed his name on it. He's a building block for the future. You can tell his identity. You know what you're getting from him every night. He played through a shoulder injury. He's been out there with a busted lip. He's doing things on the court that I did not expect to see him doing until his third season. And I know he's really ahead of schedule with the team as well. Because, I mean, he's doing stuff off the dribble, off the bounce. He's taking shots that, I mean, fans are happy to see him take, and I never thought that would be the case. And it's just been amazing to watch his growth. But the way he's picked up the game, he's a very smart individual. You get around him just for like 5 minutes, and you can tell, I mean, he knows three different languages. Basketball is not that complicated of a sport. You put the ball in a hoop, you set the screen, you get up a lot of effort on defense. And he's doing all those things, and they're letting him grow his game. And, yeah, you're right. It's one of the better blessings of this season to see is his development.
With everything that's gone on with the Pelicans, the Saints season is coming to a close on Sunday. So, you know, NBA basketball will be full, you know, center stage for fans here right now. What can this team do? Obviously, I think that you look at the standings and getting back even into play-in contention isn't even a thought for anybody at this moment. But what can the Pelicans do to regain some fan interest as we have the NFL season for the black and gold wrapping up, and they're going to be basically the only ticket in town?
Yeah, to touch on it, nobody believes it. The fans want to see the tank, but again, this locker room and some of these people still believe a 10th seed for that play-in tournament is possible. And I was talking with some folks, and they say all they have to do right now is go 500 before the Mardi Gras break. Get through January, you know, with a 500 record, and see what you have in a winning situation. Let's get the morale up a little bit. And if you can do that, then you get Mardi Gras through the city, you get a few more wins, and who knows? With Luka going down, with Golden State losing, what, 9 of the last 11, there's going to be a few of these teams that fall back to earth. Sacramento's fallen down already. You never know if this team gets on a run what might happen under Willie Green. And maybe some of us would hate to see it because we want to chase Cooper Flagg, but they're competitors in that locker room. They're competitors in the front office. They know what the season is, where it's going, and how most people think it should go. But they're going to keep fighting for that next paycheck and for the next win, at least for the next month. If they lose too much, then you'll see some sell-off. But that's what I want to see. Just go 500 through the next month.
Chris, if folks go to Clutch Points right now, what can they find out there? What do you have posted going on?
Well, I just did a big thing with Jaren Jackson Jr. and the All-Star. That's for Memphis folks. It might have been tuning in. I had a few of them on Twitter asking me about some trades between the Pelicans and the Grizzlies. But I'm going to be doing a few things on Brandon Boston and how he's really deserved the contract. And some little trade opportunities, some things I've been hearing. Things like with Marcus Smart coming in for Brandon Ingram. I don't think the team wants to keep Marcus Smart. He's a 6'3 guard. He's 30 years old. And finding a third team is going to be complex in those sorts of situations. But I'm going to drop some stuff like that over the next couple of days.
Always appreciate your time, Chris. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
Chris Dotson, who covers the NBA for Clutch Points. You can check out all his work there. We are still in the third quarter over at the Sugar Bowl looking at things, Mike, and it is 20-10, still Notre Dame having the lead over Georgia. Going to be curious here what's going on with the spot of the football right now, or was there contesting a turnover?
No, it's contesting exactly where he fell with it, if it was a first down or not, and where his knee hit. Because the ball's clearly over, but, you know, it's also about knee and everything else. To me, it looked as though he probably got the first down. But where they marked that, man, it is really, really close.
I see the chain gang coming out here. Let's see what that ends up saying. But if you're looking just by the marker on the television, it looks like it's just a little short.
See, man, I thought the way he hung the ball out there, he might have gotten it. But
not a good spot then.
not a good spot if you're a Notre Dame fan.
Right.
Because now, basically, you kind of got to make the big decision on what you want to do. But, man, Notre Dame's defense has really been the story today. And also special teams. And when you play in these type games, you got to win the special teams part of the game. And they have done, other than the mess up on the coverage on Cash Jones, they have done a really, really good job. So now they've set up Georgia with a short field, basically giving them the football at the 50-yard line. And let's see if Georgia can take advantage of it with 5:42 left in the third quarter.
Yeah, down but far from being out of this right now for the Bulldogs.
Well, man, Gunnar Stockton, it's his moment, okay? It's his moment now. He's got to be able to pull this out.
Definitely looking at our picks for these games. I know I had a rough go at it. When we get back, we're going to get into our pick six segment right here on WWL, the Treasure Chest Casino. Definitely take Mike's advice for sure. You'd be doing all right this season, or Charlie's. Me and A-Bear have been horrible. We'll find out the complete standings, though, when we get back after this break. So stay tuned here on WWL. Well, just like that, we're back here on Sports Talk, and Notre Dame's got the ball back after the Georgia Bulldogs couldn't do nothing with it after getting
at
midfield there, and even went for it on fourth down. Nothing.
No, man. Again, Notre Dame's defense and that big special teams run back kickoff has really been the story today. Notre Dame's defense has really been smothering, other than you give up one big play.
All right, time to get into our pick six segment here on Sports Talk. And Charlie, what you got for us? Although, no, it is not good for me.
It's an incomplete score for everybody as of now, guys. But if we're going off the seven games that are already completed, I went 3-4. Bad week for me. Boise really kind of messed me up. Texas messed all of us up. Mike, you went 4-3. Bobby went 4-3. Steve, 2-5. As you mentioned, not a great week for you. Where Bobby had me is the Vikings game against the Packers. We got him back with the Raiders against the Saints. But that Penn State-Boise State game is really going to haunt me for this one here, guys. So you know, we still have the Georgia, you know, results left to go. All of us picked Georgia in this game, so it's not looking good for any of us at this point, but we'll see what happens. We're not going to pick the Orange Bowl just yet, guys, because we don't know if it's going to be Georgia or if it's going to be Notre Dame and what the line's going to be for that game against Penn State. But we will be picking the Cotton Bowl this week on Friday, January 10th, number 8, Ohio State, 6-point favorites right now versus number 5, Texas.
Ohio State.
Yeah, the way they've been looking, it's hard to pick against the Buckeyes right now who've been rolling. I do like Texas, but, man, give me the Buckeyes, too. I'm rolling with them, like Mike said.
It's really funny because I think this line open is like Texas minus 2 initially, and a ton of money. I mean, a ton of money came on the Buckeyes. So now they're 6-point favorites, and I like the 6. If it were 7.5, maybe I'd be leaning Texas, but I've been riding with Ohio State for quite a while now, guys. I'm with both of you. Give me the Buckeyes in the Cotton Bowl. NFL Week 18, we got 4 games to pick from. As I mentioned, we'll be picking the Orange Bowl later. I'll let everybody know what the picks are once we know, you know, the spread, the opponent, all that good stuff. So we're going to move on to NFL Week 18. Saturday Night Football, the Bengals 2.5-point favorites at the Steelers with their playoff chances on the line. They need some other things to happen, but 2.5-point favorites in Pittsburgh.
I'm going to go with Cincinnati. Man, that last game was so tight. Ended up being a Steelers win. But, man, you know, for the Steelers to keep, you know, the Bengals to keep that heartbeat, they got to win. So I'm going to go with Joe Burrow and company.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mike. I believe in Burrow, and I think this will be a tight matchup. But
yeah, I agree.
Cincinnati here, I see them pulling away to get the victory, and hopefully we get a Joe Burrow sighting in the postseason.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot for that to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with that Chiefs-Broncos game. I know the Broncos are like 10.5-point favorites against Kansas City because they've locked up the one seed. They're resting everybody. So it's probably going to be Denver snagging that 7th spot in the playoffs. You know, we'd love to see Joe and, you know, Jamar and the guys make it in, but I just don't see it. However, I do agree with both of you. I do think the Bengals pull off this win at the Steelers. They're just red hot right now, guys. And the Broncos, with everything to play for, you know, potentially if they would have won that game this past weekend, they would have been booking their first ticket to the playoffs since they won the Super Bowl. But they fell short against a very gritty Cincinnati team. So give me the Bengals. Joe Burrow's playing at an MVP level. They go into Pittsburgh, and they win by 3 or more points, guys. The Panthers at the Falcons, NFC matchup. Falcons obviously need it to stay in contention, but they open as 7.5-point favorites against Carolina.
Do we get any A-Bear picks this week or not yet?
I don't have them yet, so okay. We'll wait on that.
Sorry, I threw off track there.
No, okay, you're going to go to me first. Man, I know it means so much to Atlanta, so I think the Falcons. I'm going to go with Atlanta. I know it's more than a touchdown, but, man, the Panthers, they El Stinko last week. They didn't play well at all.
I know Chuba Hubbard's banged up.
And Chuba's not going to play.
Right.
He's gone for the year, so I'm going to go with the Falcons.
I do like the way that Bryce has been, you know, leading the Carolina Panthers of late. But I'm sticking with Mike on this one, too. I don't see the Dirty Birds dropping this game. And 7.5 seems a little steep here. But, man, Mike said it. Carolina Kitty Cats or El Stinko. I'll roll with the Falcons in this one to cover.
Another clean sweep here, guys. I'm going with the Falcons minus 7.5 as well. Just that offense for Atlanta versus the Panthers defense, which just got, I don't know what the word for it is. They got spanked last week against the Buccaneers. And I'm expecting something pretty similar here with Atlanta hosting the Panthers this upcoming weekend. Falcons minus 7.5. So we all have Atlanta in this matchup. Up next, we got the Saints at the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay, 13.5-point favorites. It's the same exact spread that we saw just a couple weeks ago, guys, when the Saints played Monday Night Football against the Packers.
Well, I picked the Packers then, and I'm picking Tampa Bay now. I think Tampa, man, it's everything from the Saints. They're walking wounded. And so, to me, this is the easiest pick of the bunch. I'm going to go with Tampa Bay.
I got burned by the Saints in the Green Bay game. I thought they could at least cover there. I thought they could get a victory even against the lowly Raiders. That didn't happen. So I'm jumping off the wagon and give me the Tampa Bay Buccaneers giving points here.
I'm really, really nervous, guys. No Derek Carr, no Alvin Kamara, no potential Kendra Miller. We'll see what happens tomorrow once we have the official injury designations, but the fact that all three of those guys have gone both days without practicing so far, it kind of tells me you might see Spencer Rattler yet again in the season finale. I'm with both of you. Again, this is Our fourth clean sweep in the last four games, guys. Give me the Buccaneers, 13.5 points in Tampa Bay. Finally, wrapping things up, Sunday Night Football, probably the game of the year. The winner gets the one seed. The loser gets the five seed in the NFC and misses basically a home playoff game as a 14-win team. That's just awful. But we have the Vikings at the Lions, Detroit 3-point favorites at home.
Man, give me the Vikings. Man, Detroit, and God bless Aaron Glenn. What he's doing defensively to keep that unit together with all those injuries. But the Vikings have just been red hot offensively, and so I got to go with the Vikings here.
This one will be a little different, at least. I'm going to go Detroit Lions. They just impressed me so much. Mike mentioned, obviously, with the defense being decimated, kudos to Aaron Glenn, what he's been able to do there. But that offense is so scary and what they're able to do. Give me them getting, given the 3 points to a Viking squad that, I mean, I keep waiting for them to falter. Kudos to them as well. But the Detroit Lions here, I think, are going to end up wrapping up that number one seed on Sunday Night Football.
It would be so disappointing for the Vikings, you know, to have such an unexpected season, and then all of a sudden they're sitting with a chance to get the one seed. But then it would be so disappointing for the Lions as well. This is a historic year for them. If they don't get the one seed, that first round bye, and then they host a playoff game in the second round, I mean, there's so much at stake here. It's the easy pick for Sunday Night Football this week. I'm really looking forward to this game. I keep betting against the Vikings, and it keeps biting me in the butt, but I'll do it again. I'm taking the Lions in this one, and, you know, I'm not confident really in the spread. What I'm more confident in is the over in this game. I know the Vikings defense has been playing really, really well, but the Lions offense is just elite. The Vikings offense should be able to put up points in bunches against this Detroit banged-up defense. Give me the Lions minus three, though, guys. This could very well be, you know, I say this pretty often when it's a really good game, could be a push, you know, like a field goal game. I think the line is pretty, you know, on point, I guess I would say, from Vegas. But give me Detroit minus three. So, Mike, this is the one game we're different. And, Steve, you and I have the exact same pick. So we'll see how it goes for us.
What is the over, Charlie?
I'm going to have to look it up real quick.
Okay, I got you. Me. No problem.
According to BetESPN, guys, it's at 56.5 right now.
Man, I thought it'd be more than that. I would have thought maybe 59. I get you, Charlie. I know what you're talking about.
I think it's maybe because the Vikings defense has been playing really, really well, but I'm putting my faith into, you know, Ben Johnson and that Lions offense to put up some big points.
Yeah, in a matchup with the Detroit Lions, that could there be the potential of a new head coach for the New Orleans Saints, either the offensive or defensive coordinator coming to New Orleans? We're going to take a break after our Pick Six segment. Hope you take Mike's advice and definitely not mine. Well,
no,
Mike's
don't take my advice.
Well, it's been a rough year for me all around, although at least I still had the lead on Hey Bear. I'm just hoping I don't come in last place out of the group.
If my 5-year-old granddaughter could pick, she'd be in the running with y'all too.
Mike, you've been a coin flip this year, 50-50 heading into this past weekend. Now you're at 54 and 53. As of now, I'm at 60 and 47. I'm doing the math because I haven't put it all out there yet. Bobby's at 50 and 57, and Steve, you're currently at 50 and 57 as well, so you're right there tied with Bobby.
With A-Bear now.
Yeah, you're even with him.
Next year, I'm going to get my 5-year-old. Oh, she'll be 6 then. I'll get her to pick.
We do. We should get our guest kid picker.
Yeah. And she might outdo me on that.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino till 7 o'clock. Stop by, say hey, put some money on some games as we get ready for the final week of NFL action. We'll return right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, closing out the 5 o'clock hour. Notre Dame now up 23-10, tacking on a field goal to extend their lead over the Bulldogs. But right now, Georgia is driving and desperately in need of a touchdown here. We'll see.
No field goal. They need a touchdown.
Right. They need six for sure.
No question.
Looking at the Bulldogs, Mike, I know they got another ATN over there. Any more brothers in that stable coming out to the college football ranks?
I don't know. Man. But goodness gracious. Again, the story today has been how well Notre Dame's
defense
has really played well. You got the big kickoff return, but their defense is just... other than a few plays here and there, they have really played well, basically, for a little more than three quarters.
When we get back after the break, we'll start breaking down Saints versus Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Eileen Nachik from WFLA in Tampa joins us, as well as our Saints sideline reporter, Jeff Nowak. So stay tuned after the news break right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk, everybody. Our final hour here at the Treasure Chest Casino, and time is running out for those Georgia Bulldogs to stop again on fourth down.
Tick, tick, tick,
Notre
tick,
Dame tick, up tick. 23-10, Mike. 9 minutes left here in the game for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish to close this one and advance to take on Penn State in the next round.
Man, give 11 game balls to the defense.
Ooh-wee.
Ooh, man, they have played well today. Really have.
This hour breaking down Saints versus Tampa Bay, the season finale, regular season finale. The black and gold heading over to the Buccaneers, trying to stop them from winning a fifth consecutive NFC South title. To help us break down everything Buccaneers, Eileen Natchik from WFLA in Tampa Bay joins us now. Eileen, how you been over there?
Oh, my goodness. It is so nice to hear from my old friends over there in New Orleans. I am doing fabulous. Thank you guys so much for having me on. How are y'all?
We're doing great. Eileen, before I get into Tampa stuff with you, it's a story that happened in the summer. And I wake up one morning, and I got my oldest grandchild. She's 10 years old. And we watching the Today Show because of the Olympics. And who I see on there... It's you. I'm like, hey, I'm going to say, you know, hey, Pops has done pretty well in this world. But I said, look at Eileen on the Today. So I got to tell you, first of all, proud of you that you were able to cover the Olympics and be involved with it with NBC and the Today Show. But how was that experience?
Yeah, you know what? Thank you so much for mentioning that. I really appreciate it. I mean, that was obviously, I mean, what's better than covering the Olympics, right? The highlight, one of the highlights of my career, right? If not the best. And just super, super grateful to have that opportunity and you know, represent my city and just the athletes and people and coaches and fans that I've spoke to was, I mean, how do you even put it in one word, right? So really, really grateful, and hopefully I was able to, you know, share some amazing stories and put some smiles on some people's faces, but forever blessed for that experience. But I appreciate that.
Eileen, I look at Tampa and how this has transformed for them. You know, I think back to 2020 season, they bring in Tom Brady and they get Gronkowski and Jason Pierre-Paul and Dominick Sue, Antonio Brown. And they were a veteran team back then. And they didn't win the NFC South that year. The Saints did, but they won when it counted at playoff time. Ended up winning a Super Bowl and then have reeled off three straight, so to speak, NFC titles in 21, right. 22, 23. And how this rebuild has happened with Jason Light, because he had a lot of dead cap money. And the way to beat that is you got to draft well. And how well this team has drafted the last couple of years. Eileen, that's the real story here. Now, they did hit big with Baker, but also bringing in a group of really talented young core players to the lineup is really going to propel them, I think, this year and also for future years.
I totally agree with you, and I've got to ask you if you saw my story for today at work, because that was literally what I did my package on today, was just how well they drafted this year. And not only that, but like the live production they're getting out of these guys, what three of their seven draft picks have scored at least a touchdown in the last two games, right? So these rookies are acting like they've been in the league for a few years now. And you talk about Jason Light. I love him because he's just so personable. Like, he's on the sidelines. He's running up and down. Sometimes I feel like I mistake him as a coach out there on the sidelines because he's just so involved and really has a relationship with these guys. And I think that's what kind of makes him special and them special over here in Tampa Bay. But you talk about Bucky Irving, my gosh. One of my favorite parts about watching him play is that the crowd has caught on to, they scream, Bucky, Bucky, Bucky. They've got like this thing going on whenever he does his thing out there. But you got Jalen McMillan too. He scored twice last week. He's absolutely crushing it. Tyke Smith, you know, he's been a big help in the DB world with Antoine Winfield Jr. Getting injured. So you just got these young guys stepping up and acting like veterans. My gosh, Grant Barton, how we can forget him, rookie center. I mean, that's not easy to do here in the NFL. So you hit the nail on the head with what these guys are doing out here currently in Tampa Bay.
How surprised are you? Okay, when they signed Baker Mayfield, yeah, I don't think anybody could have thought he would have this much success. And this year, 42 touchdown passes, which puts him in elite category. Only 13 guys in the history of the National Football League has done that. Now, he's had a few more turnovers than he did a year ago. Yep. But he's the straw that turns the drink with this franchise.
It's true.
And I really believe no one could have predicted he would have turned out to be this good. You might have thought he had some success, but not at this level.
I don't know if anyone thought maybe, and he's been asked that too. He's like, hey, like, you know, did you think you were going to be here right now? But what I love about him, and I really truly believe that these are genuine answers from him, is that he doesn't care. He doesn't care about these, you know, him going 27-32 for 359 yards last week, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, whatever. He doesn't care. His passer rating of 153, I believe it was. What matters to him is the team and winning. And he's always talking about, like, he wants to be a personable guy, right? Like, when Brady was around, he was kind of like, okay, you know, but Baker's, we describe him as, you know, a dude's dude, a guy's guy. You know, he's out there, you know, maybe grabbing a beer with Mike and Chris, you know, on an off day or something. Like, he's so personable, and like, these young guys feel like they can go up to him and just, you know, talk to him about anything. And Liam Cohen said today too, because we asked him about Baker, and we're like, hey, like, this guy's putting up crazy numbers right now. Second time this season he's been NFC Offensive Player of the Week. And Liam goes, yeah, you know, I gave him a call because that's what we usually do, right? We're talking about the game. And I go, hey, you know, congrats, by the way, about the NFC Player Offensive Player of the Week again. He goes, yeah, thanks. Let's go get a win this week. So he's just so zoned in on, you know, a win each week. But I will tell you this, I believe that he was going to have success, and I don't know why. It just felt so right when he came here to Tampa Bay. I don't know what it was, but when he came here, I was like, something just feels like this is going to fit. And then when you throw Liam Cohen in the mix, they've got like similar personalities. And I remember asking Baker too a while ago when Liam first got here, I'm like, how do you feel like, you know, y'all's personalities are going to go in this relationship? And he's like, we seem pretty similar, and clearly it's been working out for them.
Because of injuries, this has been sort of a weird year for Antoine Winfield Jr. And, you know, pound for pound, he may be the best player in the National Football League. Because I know one thing, when he gets on that scale, that second number is probably not a 9. It's probably more of an 8. Mm-hmm. And that little guy can play. And I know I'm getting older in this business because I scouted his dad when he came out of college.
So I'm
getting up there. But he is really defensively such a key for them, you know, if they win the NFC South, get into the playoffs, and you get a home game. And so what is the injury sort of look at with Winfield? Are they expecting him back if they end up beating the Saints and getting into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, we're wondering the same thing. I was out there at practice today, and he went from did not participate on Wednesday to limited today. So that's, you know, great news there, obviously, with his knee injury. But like, as you said, man, he's a quarterback back there in the DB world. So, man, it would be huge for them. And gosh, you're saying this, and what's going through my head as you're saying, I just hate this for him. I really hated that this injury happened for him because, you know, he had just signed his, you know, contract and this and, you know, all pro, like, just all these amazing things going on for him. And then, you know, the injury comes. So you can kind of get a feel. He's moving quietly these last few weeks, just zoned in, honed in on getting healthy. Now, the fact that he was limited today is huge. But like you said, man, that would be massive for him to come back this week. Now, can I give you a definitive answer? Of course not. But it's pretty positive him, you know, being making progress here, going from, you know, not participating to limited.
Vita Vey. And you can't miss him if he was on the street, because if you're on the sidewalk with him, you're going to have to kind of maneuver around him a little bit. But he, to me, for such a big man, is such a great athlete. And his movement skills, and you watch his feet, how he can maneuver around blocks. And, okay, if he was chasing me 20 yards, I think maybe I could give him a shot. But if he's within 10 yards of me, he's catching me. I mean, that's the way you got to look at it, because he is one of these guys that in a short area, he can make up ground quickly. But to see that mass of a man be able to be that athletic, there aren't a lot of guys like him in this league.
Yeah, listen, if the man's trying to hide, it ain't going to work, because like you said, you could spot him from, you know, a mile away. And I love the point you make about him being so athletic for his size, right? That's truly incredible. And he's a character too. Every time we interview him, he's always, you know, messing around with us and being funny. But you know, the difference maker that he is on the field, you know, if I'm a quarterback and I see, you know, 50, I'm not feeling great. You know, the man's what, about, you know, 345 pounds, what, 6'4", 6'5". And like you said, with his mobility and being able to get to the quarterback, oh my gosh, I'm thinking, how many sacks does he have on the year right now? He's obviously a Pro Bowler, but he's really, really an important piece to the Bucs defense, without a doubt.
Eileen, for you, when you look at this Buccaneers bunch going against the Saints on Sunday, what's something that the black and gold can do to pull off this upset? What are some weaknesses maybe on that Tampa team that they'd be able to exploit?
Wow, what a great question. Oh, my goodness. Well, it depends on who you guys got playing. I'm looking at the injury report here. It depends on who you guys got under center. And obviously,
it'll be Spencer,
you know,
Rattler. It'll be Spencer
okay.
Rattler.
Okay. 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 Well, I'll be sure to tell Tampa that. No, I'm just messing. But yeah, no, I'm thinking, well, you guys, maybe running the ball might be good with the edge rushers that we got. But I mean, we're pretty well rounded. I say we. Bucks are pretty well rounded. You know what I mean? You pass the ball, you got our DBs back there. Now we do have Jamel Dean. He's suffering an injury right now, and he's an important piece to the defensive backfield. So you maybe going in that area. But yeah, it's going to be a physical game. And even Tristan Wirfs said that today. We asked him, we're like, look, you know, Saints are, they're not an easy, you know, obviously there's no easy wins in the NFL, but when you go up against the New Orleans Saints, especially their defense, you know, what kind of challenges do they bring? He's like, listen, every time we play them, regardless of who's on the field, like, it's a physical game. I'm going to be sore after this game, without a doubt. I always am. It's just different when these two teams go up against each other.
Eileen, definitely appreciate the time, and we miss you here in New Orleans, and glad Tampa's treating you all right.
Look, hey, before we go, I'll tell you right now, my heart and everybody's hearts here in Tampa Bay are with you guys and what's happened recently over there. And just, you know, prayers for y'all. Stay safe, and miss you guys lots. Hope to see y'all on Sunday.
Thank you, Eileen. Miss you too, gal.
Absolutely. Eileen Natchik, sports reporter for WFLA in Tampa Bay. Saints taking on the Tampa Bay Bucks. High noon on Sunday. We'll have that coverage for you on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Taking a break. When we get back, we'll get the Saints side of things, find out what happened at practice today, what's going on in the locker room with sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. Right after this, we're here at the Treasure Chest Casino, so stay tuned after the break on WWL. Welcome back here to Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Under 2 minutes 2 minutes left in the game for the Sugar Bowl. Notre Dame on top right now, 23-10 over the Georgia Bulldogs. Want to remind everybody, all you Hoodats out there, Saints taking on the Buccaneers Sunday at noon in Tampa. Our game day will start 8 a.m. First Take with me and Charlie Long. Then at 10 o'clock, the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff with Bobby Hebert. Coming up at high noon, you'll sync up with Deuce and Haas. Again, after the game, you can sound off on the Ciroc Point after with the Cajun Cannon at Saints Buccaneers. You can join us for 10 hours of wall-to-wall coverage starting 8 a.m. Sunday. That's on WWL and the free Odyssey app. We're going to take a break, step away when we get back to our sports talk action here at Treasure Chest. Saints sideline reporter and WWL digital content producer Jeff Nowak will give us the latest lowdown on the black and gold. So stay tuned right here on WWL after the break. Welcome back here to Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. And Notre Dame is celebrating at the midfield here at the All-State Sugar Bowl. They have defeated Georgia, so congratulations to them. They are moving on in the college football playoff. And
they've never won 13 games in a season.
Wow.
Up until now. And I didn't even have to watch the end of it. We probably got about 60 people here. We near where they place in bets, and about 58 of them were screaming because they picked Notre Dame. I mean, it was that loud. Man, they were really hooting and hollering for the Irish. So, congratulations.
A 23-10 final, Notre Dame taking down Georgia.
Defense, defense, defense. Hand all 11 starters a game ball, and also the dude that run back that kickoff. That was great, too.
We are also getting ready for the Saints season finale. We talked, checked in with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now with our own Saints sideline reporter, Jeff Nowak. Jeff, how was your New Year's, and how you doing, man?
You know, I'm hanging in there. It's been a rough week, obviously, as you guys know. But, yeah, I'm glad the Sugar Bowl has come and gone. Hopefully everyone can get home safely, and we can kind of move on with the week. But yeah, it's kind of weird to kind of make this transition out of all the craziness that's been going on into, oh, it's just a football game on Sunday. But that's what we're trying to do. That's what the Saints are trying to do. And we'll see how that goes.
And Jeff, it's so funny when your season ends, and what you talk about is absolutely correct with, you know, just a heinous situation that happened here. And so many people, you know, innocent people lose their lives. But it comes to an end so quickly in the NFL. Man, we wait so long for the NFL season to start. And when it ends and you don't get into the playoffs, man, it's a real long wait before you see, you know, your team hit NFL games again. How definitive and how it's over. Basically, it's done with in the National Football League. And that's what you have here with the Saints.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing for this season in particular is, you know, we haven't dealt with this a lot over the last, you know, 15 years or so, is this game doesn't, you know, no, all games matter, whatever you want to say. The game statistically does not matter in the playoff hunt. And we've been here for 3 weeks. This is three consecutive weeks that the Saints have been eliminated, and you got to go play a football game. And I think it really tests your professionalism. I think that's what we learn about in these scenarios with football teams is who needs that motivation of the playoffs and everything to go be your best version of yourself as a football player, and who is actually a professional who can go out there and say, it doesn't matter if there's no playoffs, the process is the process. And that's what, you know, I think the Saints are going to benefit from having some veterans in that room who understand that. You know, some of these younger teams that get in this scenario, it goes poorly for them. And I think that's a big part of the reason. It's, you know, the wheels kind of come off the track. I think the Saints are going to go out there and give it their best shot. You know, will they be able to compete with the Bucs on the field from a talent perspective? I don't know. But, yeah, it is frustrating because, you know, like you said, it's such a big deal, football in this city. And, you know, last year it at least came down to the wire, right? We went into that Week 18 game against the Falcons kind of being like, all right, let's see what happens. You got a chance. That was the case. You know, 2 years before that, same situation in Atlanta, didn't make it again. So yeah, it's tough because so much goes into this season from the players, from the entire organization, from our coverage, everything. And then it's just all of a sudden the finality of it done. But that's, you know, that's the business, right?
The other thing too is I've had some friends tell me, man, you know, just was an uneventful season, to be honest, in a lot of ways, other than how it started and then the injuries took hold and the losing took hold. I said, well, it won't be that way in the offseason. I think the offseason may be much more eventful of things happening, decisions made, new head coach, new coaching staff. You got a situation where a lot of, well, I should say not a lot, but some of the guys that have been stalwarts here for a long time, they may be wearing that black and gold for the last time Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. That's true for players. That's true for coaches, too, probably. I mean, if you move on from a Darren Rizzi and you go with somebody else as head coach, does he stick around? He's been here for 6 years. That's a pretty long tenure in the NFL when you consider, you know, that's two coaching tenures that he stuck through. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in the past, it's kind of been like, okay, who are you adding to this group, this kind of a large core that you feel like is the situation? And in this offseason, it's going to be the opposite. It's going to be, who are you keeping in this group with the rest of it being kind of rebuilt around that? The guy I'm kind of fascinated to see how it goes with is Clint Kubiak. You know, is a new coach coming in going to want to stick with him in that system? I'm sure this team, this franchise, will probably want to run that back because they brought him in for a reason. 1 year with an offense is tough to say, okay, we got what we could out of it. And you saw some flashes of a really elite offense when this team was healthy. But no, I agree with you. I mean, it's going to be a busy, busy offseason, and it's going to start quickly because you're going to, you know, this game's going to happen on Sunday. You're going to start this evaluation process internally. You know, you're going to have all these exit interviews. You're going to do the evaluations of your staff, of your players, and then you're immediately going to turn to a head coaching search. And, you know, the draft gets up on you quick, and you've got to have these things in place while you're scouting, or at least you want to for the majority of it. You know, the Senior Bowl is only a few weeks away, right? So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how quickly the Saints get into that process. They've traditionally been one of the slower moving organizations in terms of, and I don't say that as a negative, I say that in terms of they're very calculated. They make sure they go through the entire process. I know that that's going to rub some fans the wrong way who kind of just want it to get done. There's always this idea that, oh, they're going to be, you know, late to the table and someone's going to get scooped up. I don't really think they're worried about that. You know, they're not, they want to be right more than they want to be first. But no, there's not going to be a lot of downtime this offseason. I can guarantee you that.
Jeff, give me a guy or maybe two guys that has surprised you this year. I'll tell you one from a year ago, and that's Foster Moreau. I look at Foster last year, and I understand the health issue. And a lot of people didn't take that into consideration, what he had to overcome to even play last year. But his play this year is so much better than what we saw a year ago. But is there somebody, if it can be whatever, offense, defense, special teams, that you were really surprised at this year?
Well, you took my top answer, so I do have to give you grief for that. You asked me a question, then you stole my answer. But, no, you know, Foster's definitely a guy that I think, when you look at it in terms of expectations versus reality, I think he over-delivered. And the only question I have is, why don't you give him more opportunities in the passing game? Because it just seems like every time you give him a chance, he delivers, right? But the only question is, why isn't he getting more? You know, it's really tough there. It's hard to point to anybody and say, like, man, these guys have been fantastic. It's been a really rough season. If I had to pick one guy, we talked to him today in the locker room, it's tough to say, oh, the first round rookie is overperforming. But when you ask a rookie player to come into the NFL, change his position, play left tackle from week one, and really not be an issue all season long. Like, he's had some rough spots. That game against the Broncos was particularly tough for him. He admitted that today. You know, as he looks back, that's probably the game that probably gets on him the most. But yeah, Talifuaga, I just think he's done exactly what you needed him to do, right? This team is not going to be right on offense or defense until it figures out the trenches, until it figures out how to block people up front, and it figures out how to rush the passer and stop the run consistently and the defensive side of the ball. And it's good to at least know you have one of those pieces concrete. Then you look over at Eric McCoy. He's obviously had the health issues, but you feel good there. So you at least have two kind of core pieces of that group, and you can figure out the rest around it. But he would be one for me. And then, you know, the cop-out would probably be MVS because, you know, his expectations going into the year, he was on a different team. You didn't have any expectations of the fact that he's basically your leading receiver right now is definitely up there. But you know, I'm trying to rack my brains to come up with somebody. You know, it's funny because Rashid Shaheed, I feel like we've all kind of forgotten about him at this point in the season. But when you look at what he was able to do over his first, what, seven games, I think he only played seven games, maybe six. You know, I think he was really kind of blossoming into the player that he could be. So, you know, it's really tough to pull some positives out of this season when so much of it has gone poorly. But I think those guys would be my answer.
You think no matter who is in charge, coaching wise, and whatever, but Chase Young, does this team make a play to try to bring him back?
I think it's going to be all about the market, right? Like I don't think he's done anything this year that makes you kind of your eyes pop out of your head, like, oh, you got to keep him around, whatever the price. But, you know, he's a guy that it feels like he's been in the league forever because he kind of has. The guy's only 25 years old. Like, he is still in a developing player entering his prime. So, you know, I think if you can get him back on a team-friendly deal, I don't see why you wouldn't, right? Like, in terms of, hey, we're trying to rebuild the core of this team a little bit, I think a 25-year-old is a guy that you would be willing to, you know, invest some money in. So I think it's really going to come down to, you know, what the new defense wants to do, right? Like, if you're going to bring in somebody who wants to change up a ton on defense, is he going to fit that scheme? I'm just assuming that the entire defense is going to be rebuilt because how can you not at this point? You know, Dennis Allen is gone. I don't think that anything that we've seen since he's left has made you be like, oh, we got to keep this in place. So, no, I mean, I think it's going to come down to that. It's going to come down to the new head coach, new defensive coordinator, what you want to do on defense. But when you're talking about a guy with that skill set and the ability, and I think he has had a better season than the numbers might suggest. I think he's fallen off a little bit over the last few weeks, but he had a really strong stretch there for about four games after Rizzi took over. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back. The guy I have the biggest question about, and I asked Joe Woods about it today, I'm going to ask Rizzi about it tomorrow, is Isaiah Foskey. We're talking about a second-round pick. We've basically seen nothing from him. And it's not that you've had him on the field and he hasn't delivered. It's that you haven't put him on the field. I think going into Week 17, he had 55 offensive snaps. And that's actually fewer than he had as a rookie. And when I asked Joe Woods why that was today, he basically said, hey, we kind of have a stacked lineup here in terms of who is he playing in front of, right? No one's really gotten hurt on the defensive line at this point in the season, right? I mean, Carl Granderson, Cam Jordan, Chase Young, all these guys, Peyton Turner even, like, they've all played in all of these games. Peyton Turner does have an ankle injury now. Maybe he misses this game, and that's your kind of ability to get Isaiah on the field. But this is my second-round pick from last year. I am not just going to say, yeah, we'll figure it out. Like, I need to know whether that guy is a player or not. And I think that plays into, okay, how much am I willing to invest in my defensive line when I have a second-round pick that I haven't even played yet? And I don't know if he can hang at the NFL level. So, no, I'd like to see Chase come back. If it's not going to be a bidding war, in my opinion, but I do think he's played well enough that the Saints would be perfectly fine keeping him around.
Looking at today's practice report, Jeff, Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara still not practicing with their injuries. Saints still holding out hope that they could possibly suit up in the season finale?
I mean, the term that Riz has used every week for the last month has been, okay, we're keeping that window open or keeping the door open for them to potentially play. It's really hard to see them playing. It's, you know, they're both doing the work, they're doing the rehab. Derek's issue has been grip strength, I believe, in that left hand. They were going to simulate some form of practice this week or some form of, like, what it would look like in a game this week to see if he could go. We haven't heard on how that went yet. I think if it went well today, he would have probably been out there at practice. So we'll see. It could still happen tomorrow, and they do that just to get him back on the field. It's tough. It's tough because you don't want to put someone out there because they're a gamer and they want to play, and then they get hurt worse, and it's a problem. I don't think you really want to cross that bridge. The guy that I have a much bigger question about in terms of I could see him playing is Chris Olave. He's been a full participant in the last four or five practices. He looks good. He's getting back into shape. And Rizzi said he had a great day on Wednesday. It's one of those situations that, hey, is it worth putting him out there? I don't know. But if he wants to play and you feel like he is healthy enough to play, there is no reason to hold him out. I could see him going out there. And, you know, I wouldn't want to have him run a full allotment of snaps. I'd probably trim some branches off his route tree a little bit. I don't want him catching any quick slants over the middle of the field where he's going to get lit up by a linebacker. But I do think it would be valuable for the Saints and for Chris Olave to get out there and just get that feeling of being in an NFL game back, so that when you go into next season, you're not still asking that question. So that's the guy I'd watch. I'd be surprised if Derek or Alvin play them.
Jeff, crazy thing, and goes to show our world sort of wheels from one end to the other. I can't tell you how many Saints fans and people who have had season tickets for a long time, the biggest black and gold supporters in the world, tell me, I hope the Saints don't win this weekend. I cannot take the Falcons being the NFC South champs. You know, I hate to say it because they were Saints fans, but it's like, man, that's no way that I am pulling hard for the Saints to win. I'd love to see them get a W, but it, the W means the Falcons win the South. I'm all against
it, right?
Yeah, I was telling Steve this. You know, I grew up a Giants fan, and one thing I remember vividly is that in 2020, the Eagles, Giants, and Washington, I think they were the football team at that point, we're in this exact scenario. If the Eagles beat the Commanders in Week 18, the Giants get in. If the Eagles lose to the Commanders in Week 18, the Commanders get in. The Eagles, up until halftime, they were like, all right, we're going to win this game. Then Doug Peterson, probably in hopes of saving his job, yanks Jalen Hurts, puts in Nate Sudfeld, and it's like, he gives us the best chance to win. This is Jalen Hurts as a rookie. He's already the backup. They've already benched Carson Wentz. It was a clear tank job. Giants fans were irate, but then the Eagles were like, hey, we didn't want to ruin our draft pick. We get it. They fired Doug Peterson anyway. But I think that's the dream scenario, right? If you're a Saints fan, you want to see them go out there and play well. I want to see Spencer Rattler go out there and ball, right? And then you kind of you prove that you can win the game in the first half, and then maybe you sell a little bit in the second half just to give Falcons fans some hope and then yank it away from them. But no, I mean, you're going to send these guys out there with the goal of winning the game. Whether they win the game or not, you know, my whole thing is it's not going to hurt your draft pick. They can't drop any lower than 10th. So just enjoy it, right? If you go out there and I would much rather be the spoiler than look bad, lose a game, and do whatever. If you can go into Tampa's house and embarrass them, that will feel so gratifying. Even though the Falcons will get a playoff game, whatever. I'm all for that. I am for if I can build some positivity going into the offseason in this year that was so just dreary and not fun and injury plagued and whatever, I'm going to do it. And honestly, I think this city kind of deserves a few hours on Sunday to watch an enjoyable football game. So, you know, as much as I want to agree with you and say, like, I think it would be worse for the Saints to help the Falcons into the playoffs. I don't know. If I can close out with a win, I'm going to do it.
But they're going to have an enjoyable game Sunday to watch, I think. Minnesota-Detroit.
That's true.
Jeff, always thankful for your time, and hopefully we'll get some more info on this black and gold bunch before they head out to Tampa Bay. You have a great trip, and we'll be talking soon. Have a good one.
Thank you, Jeff.
Sounds good, y'all. Thanks.
Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, also our WWL digital content producer. You can always check out his great work at WWL.com. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk as we wrap things up at the Treasure Chest Casino. It's even our season finale, so we'll be back to close it out right after this here on WWL. We're back here at the Treasure Chest Casino closing out our final edition here Thursdays at the Chest here on Sports Talk. Been a good time, Mike.
Yo.
Thoroughly enjoyed our season, the hospitality, the atmosphere here.
Man, it's
really
great.
Good time at the Treasure Chest.
Oh, yeah, we enjoyed. Man, I get to meet a lot of people when they place in that bet not too far from us. So, man, I hear it pretty good. But it's great to be here. And they treat us really, really well. And come on out to do a little bit of gaming. You can watch all the games on TV if you hear in the background. And today it was especially loud because we had a big group of people that were pulling for Notre Dame, and they got
their
wish.
Tickets, right?
They cashed. Man, that line was real quick once the game was over with. So I want to thank everybody with the Treasure Chest and also to Donna who set all this up.
Absolutely. Mike, you just saw this as ESPN. Flash the score. Notre Dame winning 23-10 over Georgia. Riley Leonard passes for 90 yards and a touchdown, but he ran for 80.
Yeah, and I was telling you that. Okay, completes 15 passes for 90 yards.
3.8 average.
Yeah, but he rushed for 80 yards. It was critical plays. He was able to convert. And, man, I think about Riley. First time I saw him, he was at Duke, and then he makes the transfer out to Notre Dame. What a great job Marcus Freeman has done at Notre Dame. And think about them losing early in the season and all the heat that he took for that.
Everybody
and
wrote him off right away.
And they've steamrolled everybody. Now, I don't know if you want to call 23-10, but that's a big win against Georgia.
Absolutely,
a 13-point win against Georgia, that's a big win.
I'm Steve Geller from Mike D'Atelier, also Luke Augusta, our station engineer.
Luke!
Thanks so much for joining us here at the Treasure Chest Casino for Sports Talk. Have a great week. We'll be talking to you Sunday for Saints action, taking on the Buccaneers in the finale. Have a great night, everybody.